Blog Talk Radio.
Too cute. Good evening and welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. I'm Karen, and tonight we have Wenda C. on to talk further and more in depth about the journey and also about the other side of things. So I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy Gletch.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to have you back. I enjoy listening to you talk. I'm going to go ahead and let you start. And just for those that haven't heard or haven't listened to the show, just, you know, if you would tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we can go into what you wanted to discuss this evening.
Okay. My name is Wenda, and I'm Anishinaabe from Canada, and I follow my cultural way, and I respect other people's beliefs. But I do want to, you know, it's going to be 30 years on the 16th that I quit drinking, and it was a fatal way to, almost fatal, if it wasn't for this person coming to ask me if I was okay on the morning that I was going to commit suicide. And it's still, you know, after all these years, it still hurts my throat. Like, I could almost cry about it, and it always makes me think of other people too, that what they're going through, and, you know, they can't help themselves, or no one's there to help them. I mean, in a spiritual sense, I found myself very fortunate that way. And I honor my culture. You know, I believe in my dreams. I believe in other people when they have their dreams. There's always a reason why we have dreams. They connect us. And it may be spirits that are entering into our dreams and helping us see what we don't see, or helping somebody to see what we should see. Yeah, that's what I... But tonight I just want to talk about what would have happened should I have carried through. It makes me think about it because my sister passed away last year in April 1st. And the night before she was, she called my mom and told my mom, these people are bothering us. And my mother, she said to her over the phone, and my younger sister heard her saying to her, well, tell them to leave. Tell them to leave your home. And that didn't happen. And the next morning, my sister was found dead and her partner was found dead on the street in front of their home. She died of carfentanil. It's deadlier than fentanyl. And it was from this reserve that was nearby the city. It was there already. RCMP put a bulletin out that it was in there, in that reserve. And not too long after that, that's when my sister died of carfentanil. She took fentanyl before, but not carfentanil, which led to her death. And the police, the city police, it as an accidental overdose. You know, I find myself angered about it sometimes, and you know, I could just scream and, you know, because these people knew what that drug was, and they pushed it onto my sister and her partner. You know, they took too much, or it was deadly in the first place. It doesn't matter how much you take. So I don't think it was accidental. And that's the way my sister was living. And to this day, I'm accepting it that she had passed on at the same time, because she's not doing drugs anymore. And she's not drinking anymore. You know, and she's not associating with these people anymore. And I, to this day, I don't know what it was that bothered my sister to go into drugs and drink. She was drinking at first, and then she went into drugs and drinking. And I don't know what that was. And she wouldn't phone me. She wouldn't phone me because she knew I quit drinking and I was into her cultural way. And that may be what she didn't want to call me for, you know. She was scared because people are scared of our cultural way. You know, it's not nothing to be scared of. It helps, it heals, it helps to heal you. It's has nothing to do with witchcraft. It's so nonsense. What if anybody thinks that our cultural way is witchcraft? It isn't. It's our Anishinaabe reality. It's something of us. We can see things. We can see those spirits. So that's that. Really, I'm still hurt that my sister left like that, and I didn't get a chance to talk to her. And there was nothing I could do if I had seen her. It's not my place to scold her or to judge her, or anybody for that matter. That's not our way to be judgmental. It isn't. But that really hurts. The person leaving through a death like that, and you leave your family broken. No answers. This is what it feels like. The effects of alcohol and drugs. Nothing can soothe your mind from that. How it affects you. I love my sister so very much.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, January 2nd this year. I lost a niece. This is very tragic to tell. My cousin can't speak, but I'm going to speak for her tonight. She had 7 children. The oldest was Karen. That's the one that passed away January 2nd. Not too long ago. Yes, 11 days ago.
Yeah.
And she was kind. She had 2 children. One had, the oldest one had the little boy was handicapped, and then the little girl, she's a perfect little girl. She's, I think they're 6 and almost 2 years old now. And she gave them up. She gave them up and let them get adopted. That was her choice. Because she knew she couldn't look after them. And she started getting into drugs. The father lives here in the reserve, and the mother was killed by her stepfather. So my cousin, she married this man. He was an older man, and he believed in, well, he was projecting that he was a spiritual man. And he had 5 girls with my cousin. 4 girls and 1 boy. And this was in 2005. They called me. I was working up north, and they called me and said that my cousin was shot. And I couldn't believe it. And then they said that her husband shot himself too, after he shot her. And the 2 older girls came to the kitchen after he shot their mother, and then he told them to run to the neighbors to phone the police, because he had cut the phone lines. And then when he went and shot himself outside, so he committed suicide. So the night before that he did this, he went to a sweat. You know, he was so controlling. He used spirituality to control my cousin and say this is the right way and blah, blah, blah. And I just found out recently that why he killed her. He killed her because she found out that he was fooling around with really young girls, like 12 years old, this sick man. And she confronted him because there was bloodstains on their sheets in their bed. And she told him. And she said she was going to expose him. That's why he came and killed her. He didn't want anybody to know, but people know. People know now. So when we had the funeral for my cousin, and Karen was there, and she talked to me, and you know, she said she wanted to talk to me after. I said okay, and then all the little kids were lined up and sitting beside the coffin, and the smallest one was, I don't know, less than 2 years old. Over 1 year old, maybe. Close to one. And I viewed the body, then I was going to go and hug them, and that. I'll never forget that image. She was, the little baby was holding up her arms to beat. She wanted to be hugged. So I went and hugged her. I wanted to cry, but I couldn't. I didn't want to cry and upset her. So I hugged them all, and then I went and cried outside. And after the funeral was done and everything, then Karen called me. Her name is Karen, and she's beautiful. And we talked, and I said to her, are you okay? And she said, no, I'm not. She said, you know, I'll never believe in our cultural way again. I said, why are you saying that? Then she's the one that told me that her stepfather went for a sweat the night before he killed her mom. And he was very abusive to me. She said, you'd hit me with a broomstick in any chance he got, she said. So no, I said, yeah, but he wasn't being real when he was projecting the spirituality. And she said, no, he made me not believe in spirituality by just the way he was. So I couldn't talk to her. And then she started drinking, started getting into fights. And then she got into a relationship. Abusive relationships. And then that's when she started taking drugs after she gave up her babies. And she had people in her home. She had a one-bedroom home, and she rented it out to people she barely knew. And that's when she, again, it was overdose. You know, and I have a suspicion that it wasn't overdose. And again, these policemen, they call it accidental overdose. You know, and then these people weren't even around when the police came. Her purse was gone, her wallet was gone, her TV's gone. A lot of other stuff was gone from the home. These were druggies that were in her home. You know, that people that are on drugs don't care. It's just like me when I was an alcoholic, I didn't care. I didn't care either. I didn't care because I felt so much hate and, you know, towards my parents, the way my life went, you know. And I believe that seeing them drink and fight, and I believed it myself that, hey, this is the way that it happens, and it doesn't. You know, this is what happens. You get into a relationship, and you fight, and you drink. You get beaten up, you know. So that's what I thought. And my parents became abstainers, and my two youngest sisters, they didn't see my parents get drunk, so their thinking was different from mine. You know, they wouldn't believe it if I told them all the things that happened. You know, they don't want to hear it because they don't think it happened. But it did. But now I'm talking to my youngest sister, and I let things slip out a little bit, not too much, just to let her know, you know, I was brought up differently from you. At the same time, I do love my parents, and I forgave them, and my mom forgave me, you know, because I always apologize for the way I was as a teenager, and there's a reason why that happened too. My father molested me, and that's why I ran away. I didn't feel safe at home, and I'd be gone and look for love, whatever that was out there, just for somebody to love me and take care of me. But later on in life, when I was in my 30s, that's when I went to therapy, and I found myself. I found myself. I found myself. I'm the one that has to look after me, to love me. That's so important. And to value myself. Those are important things that I learned from taking therapy the first time. And if anybody's listening out there and you feel like you don't have anywhere to go, take therapy. It does wonders. It will help. It will help you put your thinking into a straight path of what it's supposed to be without the alcohol and the drugs. You know, this is in this time right now, it's different from when I was a teenager. And only in 1960 in Canada was it I'm pretty sure it's all Canada. That's when it was legal for Indigenous to buy liquor. Only in 1960. Can you imagine? And before that was...
No.
People made homebrew. It was very easy to make homebrew. And you can... really get, it's different from alcohol, very different. But it's like drinking really hard liquor, probably harder than, not vodka, tequila, stronger than that. So I believe that that was what was going on before we were allowed to buy alcohol. Then alcohol came and started separating our families more. Then child welfare came along, took us up. 1960s. That's why it's called 60 Scoops up here in Canada. They're taking the children from people that were drinking. Our people. And then along came the, I think it was in the 70s and the 80s, came the acid. And now, today, it's fentanyl, meth. It's deadlier than alcohol. But still, they all break homes. They all separate everybody. It makes deep divisions in families. So it's very hard. It's harder now. It's harder for the life is getting harder when people make it hard for themselves. It's only up to the individual if they want to quit or not. You can never tell anybody to quit drinking or do drugs, doing drugs. You can ask them why. They probably don't even know. They buried it so far in between, and it's just like an onion. That's how deep you can put it. And by taking therapy, you take that layer and layer off each time till you get to the core of what it is that made you drink, that made you do drugs. And, you know, it's as a recovering person here, those are my words to you. And also, you know, you have to be responsible of you. You have to try and love yourself, value yourself. That's what recovery is. You got to be so good to yourself. It's not being selfish. Selfish is drinking and doing drugs. They take away from your families. They take away food from your table. They take away rent from having a roof over your head. That's what those things do. We buried my niece Karen on Saturday. I went to the wake on Friday night. And on my way back, it was night. I just took my little dog with me because he's good company and he waits really good. So we're coming back, and when we were coming back and I was looking outside, I was looking at the stars, and I tell you, the stars felt like they were so close to me, and I couldn't believe, is the sky close to me right now? You know, as I was driving, that's what I was thinking. And then I was thinking, well, that's who we are. We're from the stars, and the stars were coming close. The spirits, the great spirits, were coming close. Next day, I didn't want to go to the funeral, but I went. There was only five allowed inside the funeral home for the service. I couldn't go in, but I followed them to the graveyard, to the reserve, and that was hard I couldn't go near the graveyard because her siblings were there. You know, I'm not saying they shouldn't have been there. It's just that that's who was there. you know, that's a COVID funeral up here. That's my first COVID funeral. There was funerals here, but I didn't go. Even to my aunts, I went after everybody left. I went to the graveyard to say goodbye to her. Not really goodbye, but to see her again and to have a safe journey home. And that's all I had to say to my niece, too. But she's with her mom. You know. So this is the effects from this new drug. It's not new, but it's hitting my family now.
I don't know what to say. I could feel every bit of the emotion coming from you telling that. And
yeah, so this is, you know, this is from my sister passing away and my niece passing away from these dreadful drugs and that they were taking, and you know, this is what it sounds like after they're gone. There's no more drugs for them, no more pain for them. And that was so hurtful to see her siblings. She left 6 siblings and her 2 children. You know. And she didn't even realize that how much people cared for her. And it wouldn't have mattered. You know, it wouldn't have mattered. Because I know, because that's how I felt too. It didn't matter. The day I was going to commit suicide, that's how I felt. It didn't matter anymore. So that's the effects. That's what I wanted to share.
Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate you sharing that. I'm hoping that for whoever's listening that they take something from the story that you just shared, that you just told us. Because my question is, do you think that someone that's taking those type of drugs, especially any drug really, but the more hardcore type drugs, if they realize the dangers behind taking them and what can happen from taking them?
Pardon?
Do you think that during the process of someone that's on hardcore drugs, is there a realization of what can happen to them while they're taking them, that one time might be the last time? Or
no,
just not?
No, like I said, they're like an onion. All those feelings. So when they're taking, like they're gone beyond already, and they're into this drug, and they're addicted to this drug, and they want this drug, whatever. They'll sell anything and everything to, you know, some places they don't even have no home. You know, it's just a shell of a house that they live in. And that's all they're thinking about is what their next high is. And when they take that drug, they want to feel the first high, how they felt like. They're never going to feel that, but they still keep trying. So they get deeper and deeper, and, you know, the reason why they took it in the first place or why they're doing it in the first place is way buried into the core of the onion. It's beyond them to quit. That's what I think. You know, it doesn't matter if your kids are taken away. You know, it doesn't matter to them. They could say it till they're blue in the face. Oh yeah, I'm gonna do something about it. Yes, I am. You know, words are cheap. Actions speak louder. You know, and it has to be them, up to the individual to quit if they want to or not. Yes. My brother too, he lives here in the reserve. That's why I moved here, because of him. He smokes marijuana, and that's, you know, two years ago now, he was diagnosed with kidney failure. So he had to go on dialysis, so he kept on going 3 times a week. Like, that's an hour and a half trip to that little city to get dialysis. Then they asked him if he wanted to try this new system, and you have to take it home. So that's what he's doing right now. So he has dialysis at home. He does it every night. And, you know, ever since he was a teenager, I watched him, and I would always wonder why does he try every drug? Or why does he drink? And why does, you know, he's just a teenager. Why is he doing that, you know? And even sniffing gas, him and my sisters, they were sniffing gas. I phoned the police on them because I was just a drinker, and I wasn't into those drugs. They phoned the police on them, and they ran away, of course, when the police came. And I don't know if they know to this day that it was me that called them. But anyways, he was always into his smoking pot all his life. And then 2 years ago, I asked him, almost 2.5 years ago, I asked him, I was going to ask him, I wanted to know. And then he cut me off and he said, I know what you're going to ask me, and no, I don't want any of my family to donate their kidney to me, he said. I lived my life already, he said. I've done the things I wanted to do. I have my children, and I had my children. Now I have my grandchildren. He said, but if a donor comes from somewhere else, then I will, yes, I'll take it, but not from my family. Why? I don't want my family to suffer because of me, because of the carelessness of the way I lived my life, because he drank too. And that's the reason why he got diabetes. So he doesn't drink anymore, but still he's on dialysis. Even that too, you know. The reason why he's done that, and he doesn't listen to the show, and I know he won't listen to the show, is because he was lusted in residential school. And for the longest time, he wouldn't talk about it till he was in his, I think we're almost in our 40s already. And then he finally said something. So I cried that time when he told me, because I couldn't believe that, you know, and at that time I couldn't even talk to my little brother because we're in a residential school. We weren't allowed to talk to our siblings, you know, male or female. We couldn't talk to each other. You know, I just cried. My little brother was molested. And it was from older boys in that residential school. Mm-hmm. So I finally had the courage to talk to him and, you know, tell him to go to a lawyer about that. It took him a whole year to do that, to go gently push him. Then he did. And he won't seek help. He's one of the 2% that won't seek help but a professional therapist or counselor. That's the male. The population of male is only 2% that will seek help. From a professional therapist or a counselor. And that's a shame.
Yeah. There's not really a whole lot of things about it at the 2% mark.
Pardon?
As a 2% is not a very, very high number at all.
No, it is. No. My perspective of that is males don't know how to communicate. I'm not knocking any men out there. It's just that it's easier for them to be silent than to say anything. And that's so hard to talk or to be with somebody that doesn't want to talk. But everything and anything else he'll talk to about to me, but nothing, not that. And he didn't want to take the suggestion of seeing someone. So all I could do is pray for my brother. You can't make anybody take therapy either. Because it's a scary thing to do. I found it scary to do the first time. Second time was a little easier. Did you have questions?
I do. I wanted to know that, you know, when you started in therapy, what did you take solace in that gave you a sense of relief, so to speak, by going?
It made me find who I really was and, you know, why I did the things I did and why I said the things I did. I said, you know, why I was such a negative person. Like, I could just, I could be fun to be with, but if somebody crossed me, then I would fight them, you know, and even my male friends would come and say, you you know, this woman is really giving me a hard time, and she's, then even one of my friends is telling, my friend is getting slapped around here. Hey, my brother's getting slapped around here, and I can't fight a woman, you know. Did not go and take up for that man. You know, the woman wouldn't fight me, of course, but she would take off. You know. Things like that. And yeah, I wouldn't put up with anybody that would try and hurt me. At the same time, I was, when I'd be in a relationship, I would be getting beaten up. And it was all, and when I got beaten up as a teenager, it was, there was nobody there to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was conniving and made sure that there was nobody around to see him do that to me. And everybody thought he was such a nice guy. Even my parents. And he wasn't. And I got to know that these male abusers were, they knew how to joke around with the policeman if he came around, and, well, you know how it is, you know, trying to be buddy-buddy, and, but the police are not like that anymore. It's not like the good old boys club anymore.
Yeah.
How a man treats a woman. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to share this evening.
I guess with the changes now with abuse and so forth, it's a good thing for those changes, because it really helps when the police do come out, so that, you know, that buddy system that you were referring to isn't. Because I think that kind of deterred a lot of women coming forward and saying, hey, look, this is what's happening to me, and that's why it's been kept as quiet as it was for so long, because they really didn't, no one really had anyone that they could go to trust, basically.
Yeah, that's right. And times are changing.
Mm.
Except now there's missing and murdered women, Indigenous women, or any kind of woman. And men.
Mm-hmm.
I recently put up a post that this family in Saskatchewan is putting out a post about they haven't heard from their family member in 2 years. 2 years. And that person was in the city, in the same province as me. And he looks like a good-looking young man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know, things go through my mind when I look at somebody like that, and somebody definitely was jealous of him and got carried away and murdered him. Or, you know, could be anything. Any scenario that happened to him. And he doesn't look like he would be a person that joins a gang, but how do you know that too?
You don't.
Yeah. And that's another thing, gangs our people are lost to gangs.
Mm-hmm.
If they knew our cultural way, they would think it was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. your culture is beautiful. There's no ifs, ands, buts about that. Very beautiful culture.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No, I felt, I feel better now that I shared what I had to share. You know, it felt like that weight has lifted from my chest and from my throat. And I hope people will share this with somebody that's going through alcohol or drugs and they can't stop. You know, what the effects is after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to share tonight is that part.
Thank you for doing that. I know that was hard to do. And I appreciate you sharing that with me and everybody else that's listening.
That's good, yeah. I wanted to do that because it was raw and it was fresh.
Yeah.
Is there
a
any
lot
questions?
Of respect for you.
Pardon?
Oh, I was just saying a lot of respect to you for doing that. I don't think I have any more questions. At this point, I can't think of anything to ask at this point. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Yes, to my fellow Sober Indians admin, I hope that you will, share. It really relieves you to share. And what you have to share, maybe someone needs to hear that or is going through the same thing that you did. You know, we're all here to share and to help somebody put their mind in the straight path, to the path to find themselves and to love themselves and to value themselves. And to reach out to your loved ones and while we're here on earth, we're here on this earth for a short time. It may not seem like it, but it is a short time. I'm 65 and my life has been short here on earth. You know, it's very short compared to the stars. I always look at this exploding star. It's if you look up in the sky to the east, and these three stars are at an angle, and if you kind of look between the second and the third to the right of it, you'll see like this, it goes bright, then it goes dull. It goes bright and it goes dull. That's an exploding star that happened like trillion years ago, and you could see it yourself. It's so far away that you could see it like that with your eye. So that's what I want to leave with you, is to find yourselves or your loved one that's into alcohol and drugs and share your stories so that they'll find their way to that peace of mind and to love themselves and value themselves.
Thank you for
coming on. That's all I want to say to everyone. Yeah. Get to me. miigwech, Karen, for having me on again.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing.
Yes, I'm happy I did it.
I'm glad you did, too. I think somebody needed to hear that tonight, and I know that it was very painful for you to share, but I'm grateful that you did. And I wanted to say, you know, for anybody out there that's needing that support, look up Silver Indians on Facebook. It's a really good group, a lot of great people, so much love and support on that page. I go there, and I do a lot of reading daily, and I see so much going on with it. Everybody supporting each other, and that's the way it should be. It should be that
yes.
way.
Yes, exactly.
And thank you. I really do. Thank you for coming on. We can go ahead and end a little bit early if you like. And
sure.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening.
Jimmy Gletch, everybody,
good
and good night.
Good night.